last chapter, you listen to the early adventures of Winston Churchill as a soldier in the British Army, seeking and finding experience and excitement in Cuba and India. Back again in the home country, Winston's mother, Lady Churchill, discusses her brilliant son with the Prime Minister, Lord Salisbury.
It's very good of you, Lord Salisbury, to take such an interest in my son. Your duties as Prime Minister must be arduous enough these times without such kindly excursions as these.
Your son is one of the most promising young men in England, madam. But how could he be anything else with such a father and such a mother?
Thank you, Lord Salisbury. His father was a great man. I think you know that better than any other.
Poor Randolph. I know he never forgave me for letting him go. But quiet times were required and political repose. I had to establish my authority. But it was most painful to me.
I believe that, Lord Salisbury. And I believe you are always his friend.
Yes, as I hope to be his son's friend. Lord Randolph Churchill's place in our political history is measured not by his words and actions, but by the impression which his personality made upon his contemporaries. Had circumstances been favorable, that personality might well have manifested itself in decisive episodes. But perhaps it will reach fruition in the person of his son.
You think Winston has a future?
I'm certain of it. Those letters in the Daily Telegraph. I've read nothing more graphic. Listen to this. Suddenly, the mountainside sprang to life. Swords flashed from behind rocks. Bright flags waved here and there. A dozen widely scattered white smoke puffs broke from the rugged face in front of us. Loud explosions were sounded close at hand. From high up on the crag, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 feet above us, white or blue figures appeared, dropping down the mountainside from ledge to ledge like monkeys down the branches of a tall tree. A shrill crying arose from many points. The whole hillside began to be spotted with smoke, and tiny figures descended every moment nearer to us. But meanwhile, the captain had made his commands heard above the din and confusion. He had forced the company to cease their wild and ragged fusillade. I heard an order, volley firing, ready, present, fire. At least a dozen tribesmen fell. Another volley and they wavered. A third, and they began to withdraw up the hillside. The bugler began to sound the charge. Everyone shouted. The crisis was over. And here, praise be to God, were the leading files of the Buffs. That, madam, is great writing.
Winston always loved the English language.
If he can speak it as well as he writes it, his place is in the House of Commons. But youth will be served, I suppose, and we must allow him a few more adventures yet. The more adventures he stores up, the more broadened he'll be. And to bring the spirit of adventure to the House of Commons would be an admirable thing.
I'm very glad to see you again, Lord Salisbury. My mother has told me of your interest.
I've been keenly interested in your book, Mr. Churchill. I've read it with the greatest pleasure. And, if I may say so, with admiration not only for its matter, but for its style.
Thank you, Lord Salisbury. Which book do you mean?
Good heavens. Have you written more than one, then?
There's the story of the Malakand expedition, which is published under the title The Malakand Field Force, and there's also my novel, Savrola.
So you're a novelist too, are you?
Yes, sir. Shall I send you a copy?
I never read fiction. However, your book on the Malakand expedition has been invaluable. The debates in both houses of Parliament about the Indian frontier policy have been most acrimonious. Much misunderstanding has confused them. I myself have been able to form a truer picture of the kind of fighting that has been going on in these frontier valleys from your writings than from any other documents which it has been my duty to read.
Thank you very much, sir. I hope you will at least let me send you a copy of that book.
I shall be very glad to accept it, Churchill. I hope you'll allow me to say how much you remind me of your father, with whom such important days of my political life were lived. If there is anything at any time that I can do which would be of assistance to you, pray do not fail to let me know.
You've the urge to go away again, Winston. I can see that's what occupies your mind. Haven't you finished your adventures yet? I would like to keep you home with me now, for a while at least.
But I've done nothing yet, Mother. A few frontier skirmishes.
Oh, you've already made yourself quite well known. The Prince of Wales wrote me a charming letter about you.
Yes, he congratulated me too. And I might say, Mother, that he advised me to stick to the army a bit longer before going into politics.
I suppose you want to join Kitchener's expeditionary force in the Sudan?
Of course, but there are difficulties.
Oh?
The War Office has favoured my application, but Kitchener seems to have his knife into me. He's refused my application.
I know Sir Herbert very well. Perhaps if I wrote to him.
Oh, Mother, would you?
I've never been foolish enough to try and stay you from any course you've set your heart on. And I'm not going to start being foolish now. I'll write to Sir Herbert at once.
There's news. I know it, Mother. You have that look in your eye.
Winston, I have a reply from the Sirdar.
Is it all right?
Here is what he says. With reference to your application on behalf of your son, I beg to state that I already have more than enough officers for the campaign. And I've been overwhelmed with applications from those who have what would appear to be far greater claims and qualifications. If at some future time, however,
you... Some future time. That means never. I told you he had his knife into me.
But why?
Oh, certain people have been talking. I've had it come back to me. Who the devil is this fellow? How has he managed to get to these different campaigns? Why should he write for the papers and serve as an officer at the same time? Why should a subaltern praise or criticize his senior officers? Why should generals show him favor? How does he get so much leave from his regiment? Look at all the hard-working men who never get anywhere.
Jealousy, my dear. Surely you can rise above that sort of thing.
The devil of it is, Mother, that I can't. I even had anonymous letters of the most abusive kind, using such expressions as medal hunter and self-advertiser. I suppose some of it's reached Kitchener and he believes it.
But he doesn't know you.
He doesn't want to know me, Mother. I can just imagine what he said when he received my application. We've had quite enough of this. Too much, in fact. He's very young, and later on may be all right. But now a long period of discipline and routine is what Second Lieutenant Churchill requires. Application refused.
Well, I don't suppose there's anything further we can do.
Isn't there, by Jove? I'm going to see the Prime Minister.
Oh, you'll never let anything stop you, will you, son?
Neither now, nor in my future life.
You're not disturbing me. I was just about to dress for dinner, but that can wait.
It's very good of you, sir. And I know this is a most awful cheek. But you were kind enough to say when we last met that...
Yes, I remember very well. I said that if there was anything at any time I could do, you would let me know. Now, what is it? Do you wish to go into Parliament?
Oh, no, sir. At least, not yet. I want to go to the Sudan.
Oh, is that all? What's the difficulty?
The Sirdar has refused my application, sir. I hope that you might intercede for me.
You should have come to me first. I can't very well go over Sir Kitchener's head. He's very touchy, you know.
So I gather, sir.
Well, I'll write anyway along these lines, Churchill. Would not think of interfering with your wishes or discretion in the matter of subordinate appointments, but would be greatly pleased on personal grounds if you could find place for Second Lieutenant Winston Churchill without disadvantage to the public service. Now, that be all right?
Lord Salisbury, I shall never cease being grateful to you.
Oh, nonsense, nonsense. I knew your father. It's the least I can do. I'll have that sent to Kitchener at once and let you know just what he said.
Yes, Lady Churchill, considering the matter, I really believe that Kitchener is going too far in picking and choosing between particular officers recommended by the War Office. I, for my part, am not at all disposed to see the War Office completely set aside by the commander in the field of what is, after all, a very small part of the British Army.
But, Sir Evelyn, hasn't the Sirdar absolute control in the Sudan?
Over the Egyptian army, madam, yes. But the expeditionary force, as far as its internal composition goes at any rate, is under the exclusive control of the War Office.
Sir Evelyn, my son, Second Lieutenant Winston Churchill, has had his application refused by the Sirdar, even though the Prime Minister has telegraphed personally on his behalf.
Winston Churchill. War correspondent, isn't he?
He acted in that capacity on the Indian frontier.
Leave it to me, my dear lady. This gives me a chance to stand up for my prerogatives. Tell your son he'll be hearing from the War Office very shortly.
Oh, thank you, Sir Evelyn. He'll be delighted.
He's very lucky to have a charming and helpful mother like you.
I'm not unlucky myself to have such a son.
Isn't it, Mother?
You have been attached as a supernumerary lieutenant to the 21st Lancers for the Sudan campaign. You're to report at once at the Abbasiya Barracks, Cairo, to the regimental headquarters. It is understood that you will proceed at your own expense, and that in the event of your being killed or wounded in the impending operations, or for any other reason, no charge of any kind will fall on British Army funds. Mother, isn't it wonderful? I'm to go after all.
Yes, dear. I'm glad you're pleased about it.
Pleased about it? I'm the happiest man in the world. I wonder what made them change their minds. I suppose the Prime Minister's telegram had something to do with it.
I wouldn't be surprised, dear.
So you see, Mother, it was ordained that I should go, wasn't it? Even though you thought that perhaps I'd had enough adventure.
Oh, I didn't want to keep you home against your own desires, Winston. That's why... Well, I suppose we'd better start packing.
One more adventure. I feel this time it's going to be a real adventure. I say, I do like the way they phrase things. In the event of your being killed or wounded, no charge to fall on British Army funds. Isn't this official outlook almost as outmoded as their official language? One day, that's going to be changed.
Kitchener, Salisbury, Churchill. Great names of a great world opening out before the eyes of the young adventurer. The great world which is to be the great stage for that leading character in a score of dramas. Winston Churchill, Imperial Leader.